Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May with the Tim May Show. You can see my co-pilot over there, Matt Wilhelm, able-bodied former great linebacker at Ohio State, national championship linebacker, Super Bowl linebacker, Green Bay Packer, assistant coach now at Lakewood St. Ed's, which happens to be one of the powerhouses of high school football, not only across the nation, but around the world. But Matt Wilhelm, welcome once again to the Tim May Show.
Good to be with you, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. By the way, did you guys win over the weekend?
We unfortunately made a trip down to Cincinnati to play Moeller. It was a back-and-forth football game. We did lose 35-30. But again, I think the feeling from both sides, as they are, I think, 8-1 now, is that, you know, they're in Region 4, we're in Region 1. We would both have to, you know, somehow continue to battle through the playoffs, get out of our region, win a game versus into the 2 and 3 region, and then see each other potentially for a rematch in the state championship. But with the competitive aspect of the game, it was an overlying feeling that there was a good chance, as long as we stay healthy, take care of our business, that we'll see each other again.
Two oil tankers headed at each other in the Suez Canal. You couldn't
ask
for more. And boy, you guys have played. This isn't about Lakewood St. Ed's, but it might as well be. You guys have played a competitive schedule, to say the least, right?
Absolutely. Like it's, and I know St. Ignatius, our rival up here in Northeast Ohio, has also played a very, very challenging schedule, but probably the best schedule in the state of Ohio. And this week is no slouch. Again, we're going to play Archbishop Hoban, who happens to be, I believe they're 7-2, got beat by Maslin in the last year's state championship game of Division II. So another great challenge, you know, Sam Greer's got an Ohio State offer. Albert Hill's got, you know, Corner's got a bunch of offers. They've got a great running back who's got, I mean, 6, 7, 8, 9 guys with, you know, Power 5 Division I offers on this football team. So very big challenge and kind of like not necessarily a must win as we're kind of like in the playoffs. But
yeah,
there's nothing better than that winning feeling, getting out healthy as you head towards the tournament.
I was going to say, man, and so that dovetails really well into what we're going to be talking about here for the next several minutes, ladies and gentlemen. A really good team coming off a loss, but now Ohio State has had a week to lick those wounds. And Ryan Day admitted, man, yeah, you know, take some time. That was a tough loss in all kinds of ways. I mean, from the way Ohio State maybe played at times in that game, in that 32-31 loss at Oregon, but also the way some things were sort of taken from them, you know, from an officiating standpoint, one way or the other. You know, you can argue that till the cows come home. Bottom line is they got beat 32-31. And, you know, in a year when Ryan Day's motto, for want of another term, was leave no doubt, you know, obviously there are doubts about this team. But first I wanted to ask you, Matt, what should be the Buckeyes' mindset now coming out of the off week? You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
The off week, you're sitting there, like we said, licking your wounds. Some guys, you know, like Josh Simmons, left tackle, is probably lost for the season, so you don't have him anymore. You've got Zen Mikulski went in for him. Whether he ends up being the starting left tackle remains to be seen. There's a shuffle. There could be a shuffle on that front line, but there were some things that had to be done just mechanically to get things straight again. But just psychologically, what should be their mindset coming out of the off week? That's behind them?
Absolutely, that it's behind them, that they've reviewed it probably ad nauseum, either personally and collectively with their position group, and then even more so offense defense. They understand the mistakes that were made. They are going to work, probably had worked through practices during the bye week, and will continue to work to fix those. I think they're going to accentuate the things they did well. I also believe that at least as it pertains to the National Football League, where you're always going to get, you know, a bye week. And then maybe if you're, you know, we hope you have that first run bye in the playoffs, is an opportunity to self-scout, you know, look at the data of Jim Knowles' play calling and Chip Kelly's play calling, specific formations, any type of tendencies, because balance from an offensive defensive standpoint, when you're marrying, you know, coverage versus pressure, or run versus pass, or do you have you developed a tendency on a specific hash of a call that you like or formation that you like? Because teams now have a staff of analysts reviewing those things and just develop a report and give that report to the coaches, and then the coaches then work diligently to create a game plan to take advantage of you. I can't necessarily say Well, I can't necessarily say those things exist for the Buckeyes. I'm sure they do, on a very small scale level through, five or six football games. I do think, defensively, the Denzel Burke thing, not to just think, say, but go to a guy that was, gave up, eight receptions or eight targets, eight receptions, 170 some yards, and I believe multiple touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken. No pass breakups, no interceptions. So, really got taken to the woodshed in this football game. How does he recover? How does the defense recover? I think Jim Knowles has to look, internally and then at his roster of guys of how they can pressure quarterbacks more. But then I would also say, from a college football landscape standpoint, to your point that there's no undefeated SEC football team. I believe there was both parity at the National Football League level with one remaining undefeated team, and there's an immense amount of parity at the college football level, both in the Big Ten, which maybe not has not played out yet, but we've seen the big matchup between Oregon and Ohio State. We've seen it in the SEC almost on a weekly basis. Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, and the way that this new realignment is going to be so great for college football. And I think there's a new excitement within these matchups of, West Coast coming to the Big Ten country, Big Ten country going out west, and the new ads into the SEC. So, but the one thing that I would also say, as it pertains to your question related to the Buckeyes and how do they move forward. And I'm not trying to say comfortable. I'm not trying to say that you're okay with it. Losing is losing. But there has to be an opportunity to go, well, we went toe to toe at this juncture with the number one team in the country, which is Oregon. After the Texas loss, has now jumped up to the number one spots. You lost by one. You did not play a clean game. You can look to the referees in certain situations and blame, but there's enough that you can look at yourself and go, we were in a situation to win the football game or to make that play, and we didn't. And let's just all hope as Buckeye fans that they fix those things and minimize those mistakes to actually leave no doubt.
Yeah, let me ask you this. I mean, you're on football teams at every level, peewee all the way up to I don't were you ever a peewee, by the way? I can't
I
remember.
was. I was
Yeah.
a peewee.
So
Yes.
here's the thing. You didn't win every football game you ever played,
No.
again, I'm sure. You did, by the way, go 14 and 0. You're on a team that went 14 and 0 in 2002 and won the national championship. Crazy when you look back on that season. And but how crazy it was, how many games y'all had the great escape, y'all did
Yeah.
Houdini tricks to get out of at least four, maybe five, even the national championship game went into overtime. But I digress on that point only to ask you this. In those, when you lose a football game as a football team where you've been rolling, does you look more vulnerable to everybody who's coming up on your schedule? Obviously, hey, they can be beat if we do this, if
Sure.
we do this. But do you feel more vulnerable yourself as a team coming off of a loss? And I say that, keeping in mind that Ohio State hosts Nebraska this week. Nebraska thought it had put together a pretty good football team here under Matt Rhule finally, and then they get
Then it went to
waxed.
Bloomington.
They got waxed. It blew up in Bloomington,
Yeah.
56-7. But so they've got their own wounds to lick, deep, deep gash wounds. But do you feel more vulnerable as a team when you've been beaten, if you follow my drift?
I would say slightly. Again, most teams that are being very realistic have the expectations to go undefeated, and we as fans, yourself in the media, and I'm sure players and coaches can look at a schedule and kind of point to the big matchups. Oregon
Yes.
was, I mean, we were talking about everybody, but also just with our eye kind of peeping over on Oregon, really, as we said, setting that table to have this big matchup. Yes, but you don't have time, and maybe the bye week does give you an opportunity to kind of blink and get in your own head about specific things. But then from this point forward, it's like, go, you can now, as a, I don't want to say second season, because it's like go run the table with the rest of the scheduled football games that you currently have. You're going to be in the exact spot you most likely would have been if you had beaten Oregon. Like, nothing would have changed. You would just be a higher ranked seed, and you would also at that point you'd control your own destiny in regards to, you know, having that first round college football playoff bye.
Yeah.
So now you're going to need a potential Penn State and or Oregon loss while also running the table. So your margin for error has gone down. If that is in fact a goal for the football team.
Yeah, let me interrupt you. And
yeah, sure.
the point you're making is now your goal, like it always has been, but your goal has been enhanced in the sense of now you want to get into the Big Ten championship game. So there's
correct.
No room for error really in that regard. When you look at the fact the Big Ten has three teams in the top four, and you've already played one, you're going to play the other, Penn State,
yes,
which is number three.
Another road game.
Yeah. So yeah, the funny thing was that the 3 years ago that was Oregon versus Ohio State, an intersectional rivalry, a game that really meant a lot, but it meant little in terms of your conference situation. And
correct.
So yeah, go ahead. I mean, everything's been blown up now from the standpoint of the new wave conferences, right?
It has. Well, the one other thing that I would also say, and this is just a year in, year out thing, given, as you said, from Pee Wee all the way to, you know, professional, is, you know, the character and the culture of a football team and the finishing aspect, because you referenced the 14-0 football team, and was there some luck involved? Sure. But there was just this innate belief that whether we had to go score or we had to go get a stop, that we were going to do it. And again, I'll say this as it pertains, you know, going backwards just slightly, is like at the high school football level, it's like this football team is playing extremely tough, and we're just getting those situations where we're not finishing and we're not winning some of the games that other teams had won in the past. And that's not always just given because you're this powerhouse like Ohio State, like St. Edward, and what we've represented. We're playing, again, a hyper-competitive football schedule, as do the Buckeyes, and it's only going to continue to be challenging every week. But that is something that I think that senior leadership now, because they've had an error and they've left some doubt, it's their leadership, the coaching guidance to, again, be a little bit more hard-nosed, to really, like, because leaving no doubt was words, and they had done it up to a point, but at their first challenge, you know, they left some doubt, they left the door open, right? And to your point about moving forward, there's some things that, there's a lot that's not perfect about this Buckeye football team. And other teams, are they going to be as skilled as Oregon? Likely no. At least maybe not the next couple, but until those challenges down the stretch, they're going to attempt to implement with talented football players a lot of the game plan that Oregon presented, which is protecting their quarterback, throwing the football down the field against, you know, our defensive backs. But our hope as Buckeye fans is that it's been fixed. We have more pressure. We have tighter coverage. We're not jumping on double moves. We have better eye discipline on the back end.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Give me, and you kind of just did, in my opinion, because, you know, see, I've always believed once you get to the playoffs and the big time games, you not only have to be able to throw the ball, you've got to throw the ball. You know what I mean? And that was really the backcracker for Oregon against Ohio State, and almost for Ohio State against Oregon. Throw the ball down the field, right? But I'm just wondering, give me one specific thing that you saw defensively from a scheme standpoint, or maybe, you know, because I truly believe every scheme is designed to actually stop the play in some form or fashion, you know?
Sure.
But give me one thing that you would change defensively, and then maybe give me just one thing you would change offensively that maybe fans might even pick up on. Maybe this week, but definitely against Penn State.
Sure. I actually, you said for one thing defensively, I'm going to marry two things together.
Uh-oh, there you go. You're doing a Tim May there.
I am. Yeah. Ask me one question. I'm going to ask three questions in one. No, basically what I'm going to do is I wrote it down already as in preparation for this, is like, it's more pressure. What does that mean? That means if we're rushing four are delivering more pressure. That doesn't necessarily mean blitz guys, right? Does it mean also, to a certain extent, blitzing more guys? Yes, that could be five, right? That could be maybe scheming things up to bring more pressure, bring different looks that, you know, forces the offensive line to struggle to protect, that gets more pressure. And so that's front end and back end. And it's marrying it up with tighter coverage. Because I think in some cases, and in some games, even taking Oregon out of it, the Marshall game, the Western Michigan game. There were situations here and there where there's just some open, and I think it's mostly in zone, I'll say. There's
Yeah.
just some open windows, some open, where we don't have pressure, and this, I'll call it MAC level, Sun Belt level quarterback delivers an accurate throw to a guy in zone, his zone, who almost feels as if he's uncovered, where we're just not playing tight enough zone. Because I know we recruit the guys that are able to play the press man and, wipe these guys off the board. But now you have the Oregon film that shows that we are susceptible to get beat as well. So I would say, the tight end up the middle in the Oregon game, completely, almost like wide open, is a situation where he couldn't have been in man unless somebody didn't do their job. So it had to be some type of zone coverage where they found the void, right up the seam. So marrying more pressure and whatever that means, and tightening things up on the back end. That means, better eye discipline, playing proper technique in man situations, but then also in zone, tightening those, anticipating where those voids are in the zone and closing those windows with pressure up front and closing that up. They'll be playing like in a phone booth, which
Yeah.
is, the constrictive aspect. From an offensive standpoint, I think, and this is where there's a massive caveat because of the amount of talent we have on offense. I would hope, and it does not seem so, that like we're not taking any aspect of having to get like distribute the ball to keep guys happy. I know that's not necessarily what's happened in the backfield. We've heard those guys verbalize it. I think Jeremiah Smith is an immense talent, and you. But I would also say, like, can he become the everyone knows where the football is going, and he's going to deliver the play as a freshman in these big games?
Yeah.
I'm not quite there yet. He's made some amazing catches. He's been a vital part of this offense. I think that the Carnell Tate, Ibuka, and Jeremiah Smith like blend, and using that each week and using them as chess pieces, not just we're going to line this guy up and we're just going to throw him the football. You know it, and we're going to do it, and it's just going to work. That can work against inferior opponents, but not against the really, really good opponents. So I would say maybe chess piecing our skill players a little bit more offensively. And as we, to your point about Simmons being out, is how quickly can we, be cohesive up front offensively to where the protection's great and we can actually chess piece, with our wide receivers and even G Scott, but then also buckle down and run the football. Because that's a big part of Big Ten football. Although we have all the skill in the world and a quarterback who could deliver it, turn around and hand the ball off and get the tough yards when you need to, and imposing your will on someone else is also a thing, and it's always kind of been a thing for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Dude, if I'd have told you that your top three teams in the Big Ten at this point, literally Ohio State's halfway through its season, but only played what, three Big Ten games, but the top three would be Oregon undefeated, Penn State undefeated, and Ohio State with one loss. There are three teams in the top four of nationally, with Oregon number one, Penn State three, Ohio State four. But then you've got an unbeaten, undefeated Indiana. Are you kidding me? 7-0, I think it is. We saw how good Nebraska was looking until it got bushwhacked by the Kurt Cignettis. Then you got Illinois dominating, in my opinion, even though the score was what, 21-7, but they dominated Michigan. I mean, Michigan is a shell of what it was the last 3 years. That's just a start. I mean, did you have this at all anywhere in your head that the Big Ten could look like this about halfway through the season?
Well, I would say it would be no surprise, and I'll just use it, say top eight, not top five, but top eight, that Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State would all be inside that top eight. And I also think that, and it's great that the writers and the coaches see how talented Ohio State is, saw how competitive that game was on the road to lose by a point with an opportunity to win it multiple, almost like multiple times to if certain, dominoes kind of or chips fall. To respect Ohio State and their talent and that game and the way in which it went enough to just drop them, and keep them inside the top five. I do think, and this is the one thing I said, maybe in preparation for Minnesota, I'm not Minnesota, I'm sorry, Michigan State, is, Jonathan Smith, first year head coach, brings in a bunch of guys, brings in a bunch of portal guys, changes the culture, marries new facilities with new energy, and it just all kind of like, it just all works, right? That was what I was like a concern playing Michigan State, especially going from, you know, from Marshall to Michigan State from a talent level. But I think Indiana, Kurt Cignetti, what I love about him is, you know, opening press conference, the man just goes, someone asked about winning and culture, and he was just, his response was, Google me. Yeah. Everywhere I've been, I've won. You know, and everywhere he's been, he's turned, you know, flipped from, you know, 2-9 to 9-2 in a conference championship, and then defends that championship. And then he, boom, goes from Elon, you know, to JMU. JMU does what he does in JMU and leaves that program with the cupboards full. Does he take some kids to IU? Absolutely. You know, but Coach Chesney, who's there, you know, at JMU, has yep. continued the winning because of the culture created by this man. So I think it's impressive. I think, for Ohio State coming out of a bye, and as much as we want to say, putting something on film being used against Ohio State, now we have an immensely talented, rested Ohio State football team who's got all the film in the world of Indiana dominating our next opponent, Nebraska. They're coming to us. They've got to be reeling getting beat by 40-plus points, you know, on the road, and now they're going to go on the road again against probably one of the most talented football teams in the country. Rested, you know, yes, still shuffling some things around, but we'll have that film. We'll be able to use and abuse that film. And again, it's just very tough from road game to turn around those warts that you have defensively and offensively that have been exposed in 1 week. And then you add the fact that it happens to be Ohio State, you know, is a very good spot for Ohio State.
Well, what is the one thing you remember when you were from Pee-wee through the NFL, when you saw a freshman or a rookie quarterback? Obviously, Dylan Rayl is a freshman quarterback, threw three picks at Indiana. One form or fashion, they were still picks. What is the one thing you want to get accomplished as a linebacker, as a defensive player, as a defense against a guy
an easy
like
question.
That? I mean, you just want him to be his head spinning on what he sees?
Yeah, absolutely. So it actually goes back to kind of like some of the extent of what I talked about I'd like to see improved from the Ohio State defenses. Well, first of all, it's marrying the pressure with the tight end coverage, but also the looks, pre-snap, post-snap look. So you align in something, you know, and you're rolling to something else or playing something else, or the backers are showed up on the strong side, they drop out and you bring weak pressure, you know. And it's not even so much that, you know, we haven't put it on film, right? But it's, you're also just forcing this 18-year-old, 19-year-old freshman that you're going to live by and die by, you know. And again, for right now, it might not be that great in Nebraska, but there will be a benefit to starting this guy, especially a legacy kid like Arreola.
Oh, yeah.
For the benefit of the Nebraska program. But it's having him process information faster than he either wants to, or again, is that 18 or 19 year old that he can,
yeah,
with the talent level that Ohio State will bring, right?
Yes.
So, and this is nothing against IU, but we're going to be more talented than an Indiana football team, just the way that it is, regardless of their record, regardless of what Cignetti's done there, is where we should be more talented on the back end, on the front end. So it's marrying up those looks, bringing pressure, showing coverage, and then, you know, we bring, you know, we play coverage and bring pressure, or and vice versa. So that's the challenge we have this week. And it's, and truthfully, as a defensive player, you're drooling and licking your chops when you get that opportunity against a young quarterback to hit him, to rattle him, but then also force him into some bad throws via that pressure and that tight coverage where you get PBUs, kill shots, and interceptions.
Yeah, it's funny because I mean I'm watching Matt, you know, Matt Rule's team there at Nebraska coming in this weekend, and I'm just, the thing is, I can see it is improved. I thought, I was stunned really by the score, because I thought one of the places they definitely addressed over the last 2 years was on the defensive side of the ball. But
same.
Sometimes a team gets you going rolling downhill and there's nothing you can do about it, right? They've got the plan and you don't. But what I like about Matt Rule at Nebraska, just like I like about Kurt Cignetti, you know, Google Matt Rule, but leave out the NFL part, right?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Temple and Baylor, he got it done, man. I mean, this guy knows how to coach, but they still don't quite have all the pieces, right?
Well, and I also think like, and only because, my son's kind of like in that like recruiting, thing going on, right, for him as a high school football athlete, is Nebraska is on the cusp of something so great.
Yes.
The facilities, the fan base, the legacy of Nebraska football and what that represents. But now I also think like that has all been tarnished for about like a 15, at least a decade, a 10-year window where Nebraska football was irrelevant. So if you look at from a recruiting standpoint, you can't get kids, right? The kids
Yeah.
want to go to the premier program. And when you're irrelevant, and maybe even some cases irrelevant since you've joined the Big Ten, which is now what, 8, 6, 8, 9 years? I don't even know what it is, but you've yet to truly
Longer
put a
than that,
team.
but you're
Okay.
right. Go ahead now.
You've just struggled to put a team together to compete for a conference championship. So you just fall into that middle lower quartile of a conference and you get lost. And so the kids that you go chase on the recruiting trails are, in some cases, what's left after the bigs, and I'm not even talking about the take the SEC out of it. I'm just saying the Ohio States, the Wisconsins, the I'll say the Iowas probably going to Nebraska and go get those kids.
Yeah.
They go into their backyard and pull kids to come up and win, go to bowl games, play in the Big Ten championship, via the old setup at Lucas Oil Stadium, and Nebraska just hasn't. So Matt Rule's got to undo that, and that's where the influx of NIL, the influx of the money into the facilities, because I think Nebraska's got like almost like second to none or second to a few type of facilities, but you got to win. The kids want to win. Now the kids want to make money. The kids want to get developed. The kids want to be in an amazing atmosphere, which, Nebraska has shown they can be. They just got to get over that hump by winning and competing here in the Big Ten.
Hey, give me a short answer to this.
Sure.
Alabama now has two losses. One's to Vanderbilt, one's to
Yeah.
Tennessee. They can't beat anybody in the state of Tennessee, it does appear. Should Alabama in this new look, and the reason I'm asking is because everything's premature anymore, because there are people that can beat each other. Alabama can run the table now, you know what I mean, and possibly still be maybe in consideration for the SEC championship game, but definitely in consideration for the college football playoff. But should it be at this point? I mean, just a year ago, they wouldn't be one of the top four teams in the country by any. I don't know how they could finish and be one of the top four teams in the country if you follow my drift.
Of
But
course.
I just want your quick take on
Sure.
is the beauty of the expanded playoff, the 12 teams, that yes. You know what? It looks like an Alabama season may not be over in the
Yeah.
sense of having a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the intrigue that college football has created with the realignments at one level.
Yeah.
And then also the expansion of the 12-team playoff, because it's going to become must-see TV for college football fans, because the same deliberation of 3, 4, and 5 of the 14 playoff is now going to be the 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Who's
Yes.
outside looking in and who's inside looking out? And you're going to be comparing resumes to, maybe a undefeated group of five or a 12-1 group of five versus a Bama with, a two team who's lost to, Vanderbilt, who's now rebuilt to a solid program. But like, it's that intrigue of the choice of this committee on who gets in and who's out and what value they put on their quality wins versus losses and so on. So it's a, and I'm sure there's no algorithm for it, and that's why there's committee members to think for themselves and then collaboratively, pump out and who those 12 are going to be.
Hey, when I say short, man, I mean that was like a 2-minute answer, but that's
That was
okay.
40 seconds.
I know, I'm just messing with you. I'm the worst guy to complain about anybody talking too much. Hey, last thing, what do you want? Just on a flat, Ohio State's the number four team in the country now. They're not number 14. They're not number 24. Number four team in the country right now. People still hold Ohio State in high regard. So I'm going to ask you this. Let's play like you're sitting in Wyoming, and you have no, chicken in the fight here. Pardon the expression. That's an old, since I just got off the Oregon Trail, that's an old thing they used to do during when they would circle the Conestoga wagons and to kill time at night. But let's say you're sitting there. What do you want to see from Ohio State this weekend against Nebraska to rekindle? I mean,
Sure.
and you, because you're a human being, you're going to take into account, wow, Ohio State looked really good, but you know what? Nebraska got drilled by the Kirk Cignettis last week in Indiana, you know,
Yeah.
56-7. So, you know, what do you want to see from Ohio State?
This can be an easy, quick answer. I want to be entertained. And what does that mean? That means I want to see those chess pieces offensively used appropriately. I want to see explosive runs on the ground. I want to see explosive pass plays to our talented wide receivers. I want to see, of course, great quarterback play. And then defensively, I want to see constriction. I want to see pressure. I want to see tight coverage. I want to see, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be a goose egg, you know, or a shutout, but I just want to see like constriction of someone imposing their will on an inferior opponent. And to a real football fan, it's entertaining to see the basketball on grass, who we should kind of be on offense, and limiting and taking away the football and inability to run and pressure on the queue and competitive pass breakups. Interceptions, overthrows on the back end.
Yeah. And when you say basketball on grass, you also mean the Tom Izzo type of basketball on grass where they're very physical inside. You know,
Absolutely.
when you think about
Absolutely.
a basketball team practicing with shoulder pads on, that's the kind of imposing physical nature
It
you want to
really
see.
means everybody scores,
Yeah.
everybody's success, everybody can touch the ball, everybody doing, you know, playing to their best is what I mean when I say basketball on grass.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, basketball coach also Matt Wilhelm. Matt, once again, man, you knocked it out of the park on the Tim May Show, and
Appreciate it, brother.
that's why we have you batting cleanup and leadoff
You
anyway. But
make
ladies
it
and
easy.
gentlemen, hey, we'll be back to chop up the Ohio State and Nebraska. Did they play basketball on grass? Did they become a boa constrictor on defense?
There you
All
go.
those kind of things, and to look forward to really Ohio State's next probable top four showdown game. Are you kidding me? In 3 weeks. The trip to Penn State next week. But until then, speaking for Matt Wilhelm, this is Tim May. We will see you then.